another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite a great debate going on in the Senate that shows the two parties just profoundly divided. A debate not about the political future here in the United States, but a debate on the Senate floor of the United States about the political future of the state of Israel. Harsh speech by Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader of the Senate. It has been called by a leading Republican one of the most disgusting speeches ever given in the Senate, which is overstating it. I mean, during the period of slavery, there were some very, very pro-slavery disgusting speeches given on the Senate floor. Chuck Schumer hasn't topped that, but he has provoked a fierce, leonine, tremendously effective response from Mitch McConnell. And another indication that he will be missed, not just in terms of foreign policy, as this issue is, but in terms of his presence as leader of the U.S. Senate. We'll also be speaking coming up to Ambassador Michael Oren, Israel's former ambassador to the United States, about the substance of Chuck Schumer's anti-Israel assault. And yes, he claims, of course, that he is pro-Israel, which he has been consistently. He is simply anti-Netanyahu. But how can you basically try to dictate to a country what its political choices should be without assaulting basically that country and the people who live and vote there? We will be also speaking later in the show to a New York Times editor who took on a huge project of going to 10 people who voted for Trump in 2016, voted for Trump again in 2020. But now, well, that's the old point of the article. Has the Trump MAGA base shrunk a little bit? Or are there more people who are coming to that point of view? Basically, the future of the election that we're going through will turn on that issue. And we will go first to what Chuck Schumer had to say, which is a big deal because he spoke for 40 minutes, and it's a long time for a Senate floor speech. And he called for new elections in Israel. Ari Fleischer, the former press secretary to President George W. Bush, put up on tweet, this is one of the most disgusting speeches ever given in the Senate. As I said, a little bit overstated because a lot of really, really disgusting speeches, speeches that used the N-word repeatedly and basically pro-Nazi and pro-Hitler speeches even during the run-up to World War II when isolationism was such a big factor. But okay, he didn't like the speech. Ari Fleischer said, one of the most disgusting speeches ever given in the Senate. Number one, senators don't get to pick who foreign democracies elect. This is election interference. And number two, Schumer doesn't understand how Israel is united to destroy Hamas. It's bigger than Bibi. But this is what Schumer sounded like on the Senate floor, criticizing Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and demanding that Israel hold new elections, as if they didn't have enough elections with five national elections in just 4 years. Here is Senator Schumer, clip 8.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. He has put himself in coalition with far-right extremists like Minister Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, and as a result, he has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for Israel worldwide to historic lows. Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah. Prime Minister Netanyahu has also weakened Israel's political and moral fabric through his attempts to co-opt the judiciary. And he has shown zero interest in doing the courageous and visionary work required to pave the way for peace even before this present conflict. As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past.
Okay, there's not only opposition, very strong opposition from the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who made a fine speech in response to this, but very dramatically opposed by Mitch McConnell. To make this sound a little bit like a debate back and forth, this is Mitch McConnell responding to Schumer on the Senate floor, clip 10A.
Jewish State of Israel deserves an ally that acts like one. People of Israel, at home and in captivity, deserve America's support. And Israel's unity government and security cabinet deserve the deference befitting a sovereign democratic country. The primary obstacles to peace in Israel's region or genocidal terrorists like Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, who slaughter innocent people and corrupt leaders of the Palestinian Authority, who have repeatedly rejected peace deals from multiple Israeli governments, and foreign observers who cannot keep these clear distinctions ought to refrain from weighing in.
And again, this is Mitch McConnell, and speaking with, I think, force and insight, particularly when he accuses Chuck Schumer of grotesque hypocrisy. This is clip 10B.
It is grotesque and hypocritical for Americans who hyperventilate about foreign interference in our own democracy to call for the removal of a democratically elected leader of Israel. This is unprecedented. We should not treat fellow democracies this way at all. Things that upset left-wing activists are not a prime minister's policies. There is Israel's policies. Make no mistake, the Democratic Party doesn't have an anti-Bibi problem. It has an anti-Israel problem. Israel is not a colony of America whose leaders serve at the pleasure of the party in power in Washington. Only Israel's citizens should have a say in who runs their government. This is the very definition of democracy and sovereignty. Either we respect their decisions or we disrespect their democracy.
And their democracy and sovereignty, which was in the original text of the remarks as released. Look, this is one of these things that's very personal for me. Whenever there's an argument about anything concerning Israel, I defer to my brother. He's lived there for 40 years. And meanwhile, Michael Oren, somebody else to pay attention to, who's also lived there many, many years, served Israel as that nation's ambassador to the United States, distinguished historian. And on the Michael Medved Show, you can go to our Substack account. That's michaelmedved@substack.com. There's a brand new column just posted up there. What will happen to the GOP if Trump loses this November? It's a new column. It's provocative. It doesn't assume that Trump will lose. All indications are that it'll be a very close competitive election. But it talks about the potential direction for the Republican Party. Meanwhile, that Republican Party has been wonderfully supportive of the government of Israel and the state of Israel in the midst of and response to an assault this morning. And it wasn't a, thank God, military assault or a physical assault. It was a verbal assault by Chuck Schumer. And Michael Oren, the former Israeli ambassador to the U.S., he posted a terrific tweet that I think just answers Schumer so effectively. Michael Oren says, regardless of my opinion of Netanyahu and his fitness to serve, and that opinion isn't high. He doesn't support Bibi as prime minister, but he supports him as the head of state of the Jewish people right now, of the state of Israel. Regardless of my opinion of Netanyahu, he writes, and his fitness to serve, Senator Schumer's call for new Israeli elections is deeply disrespectful of our democracy and sovereignty. Israel is an ally, not a vassal state. Along with the United States, we're one of the few countries never to have known a second of non-democratic government. And we're the only democracy never to have known a moment of peace. We certainly deserve that respect. And respect also is one of those things that is pleaded for in an extremely timely column. And I don't know if they recognize in the Wall Street Journal when they scheduled this column that this Schumer speech was coming, which is so far over the line. And particularly when he talks about new elections. By the way, most Israelis, when you talk about new elections, the answer is groan. Not again, because the country is divided, and they have had five recent national elections because there hasn't been a clear message from the people of Israel. And Amit Segal, who is the chief political commentator on Channel 10 in Israel, he also is the author of a new book, The Story of Israeli Politics. And he writes, in reality, according to a November survey by Arab World for Research and Development affiliated with the Ramla-based Birzeit University, 59% of Palestinians extremely support the October 7th massacre, and another 16% support somewhat that October 7th massacre. When Joe Biden refers to the Palestinian Authority as the legitimate representative of the Palestinian people, he ignores that its president, Mahmoud Abbas, was last elected 19 years ago. Yeah, that's as we always say, we're heading into his 20th year of his four-year term, because that was what it was supposed to be, a four-year term. The last time the Palestinians went to the polls in 2006, they voted for Hamas. And the point being that what you hear from Joe Biden, what you hear from Chuck Schumer, what you hear from many people on the Democratic side of things, is that the Palestinians deeply want peace, they want reconciliation, they want a two-state solution, and that Israelis overwhelmingly want a two-state solution. Well, Israelis overwhelmingly don't. If you actually look at the polling, the Israeli government has been providing humanitarian aid to Gaza, but a January survey found that 72% of the public opposes such aid until all the hostages are released. And this is one of those questions that I think anyone should ask, which is the push by the administration is for the release of 40 more hostages, who would be women and children and the elderly and the infirm. Why not all the hostages? In other words, what is the purpose of the United States to push Israel into a ceasefire before even the most rudimentary of the war goals for the Jewish state have been met? The most rudimentary goal is release of all the hostages. not a selective a little bit more release in dribs and drabs? For goodness sake, if you want a ceasefire and you want to begin negotiating any kind of settlement, and to the idea that it's 72% of the public opposes providing any aid until all hostages are released, Mr. Netanyahu has officially repudiated the ideas of renewing Jewish settlement in Gaza and direct Israeli control over the Strip. But two-thirds of his voters, that's the people who voted for Bibi last time, support such moves, according to the Midgam Channel 12 survey. In other words, this idea and the name of the column, the headline for the column by Amit Sigal, says Biden's Middle East is a fantasy world, points out that when Joe Biden and officials in his administration or supporters of his administration like Chuck Schumer talk about the Israelis and the Palestinians, they describe two peoples that don't exist in reality. According to the White House, the Palestinians aspire to peace, reject Hamas, and are ready to make painful concessions. And in reality, the polling of the in the Arab world, and particularly of Palestinians, shows support for Hamas and not any indication that Hamas is ready to make peace for the Arab world. So how will that peace be made? We're going to be speaking coming up to Michael Oren, the former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. and a former MK and deputy minister for diplomacy in the Israeli government. And he's one of those people who is not a loyalist or backer for Bibi Netanyahu, but actually is outraged at Chuck Schumer's speech and hopeful that this does not reflect on the rest of the administration. We will be speaking to Michael Oren coming up right here on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Michael Oren is the former Israeli ambassador to the United States. He's a former member of Knesset, the Israeli parliament. He is also a prolific historian and author. His latest book is called Israel 2048, looking forward to the first 100 years of Israel's history. And you can also be in touch with his insights, which are invaluable, through his Substack, which is Clarity with Michael Oren, O-R-E-N, .substack.com. Michael, right now, the entire political world here in this country is trying to figure out what Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, was actually trying to do with his speech on the Senate floor lasted 40 minutes, demanding new elections in Israel. Not enough elections happening in Israel recently, with five elections in the last 5 years.
And that's not the issue. Always good to be with you, Michael. This is following in a series of statements coming out of the Democratic leadership. I mean, we had the Vice President Kamala Harris the other day saying that the United States distinguishes between the government of Israel and the people of Israel. All right, this is, you know, when a previous president questioned the outcome of an election, these people were not particularly happy. But now they're saying the same. They're questioning the outcome of Israel's elections, and it's just not compatible with relations between allies. Certainly not democratic allies. You know, Israel is one of the few countries in the world, the United States is one of them, that's never known a second of non-democratic governance. And we're the only country on that list that's never known a second of peace. I think, irrespective of how you think about Netanyahu, what your opinion is, you've got to respect the democratic process in Israel. And what you're broadcasting to the world by saying this is that the United States doesn't respect its allies and doesn't respect its democratic allies.
What do you think Charles Schumer is trying to achieve with this? He's been condemned by everybody. I mean, very fiercely condemned by the Speaker of the House, Michael Johnson, by his corresponding Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, gave a powerful speech against him. Politically and just in terms of foreign policy, the people of Israel are not going to, the government of Israel is not going to call a snap election before 2026 because Chuck Schumer says so, right?
Well, I think that these statements actually have the effect of strengthening Netanyahu, because Israelis see that he's being beaten up by foreign power, and they're going to rally around him, as has happened frequently in the past. But I think this is all about domestic politics. It's about the key states like Michigan, where people in the government, this government, seem to think that they have to sort of curry favor with this constituency by distancing themselves from Israel, condemning Israel, or calling for new elections in Israel. I'm not an expert on the internal American politics, but it seems to me that the message goes out, even to voters in this country, that their leaders are not staying the course, and don't stand with what they believe in. Problematic, what can I say? All around, yeah. Both domestically and internationally.
The war has been going on since October 7th, as everyone knows. Will it end sometime within the next few months, and how will it end?
Well, it depends on how you define end. Ending would be Hamas no longer poses a military threat to Israel or to the Palestinians, for that matter, and Hamas cannot regain control of the Gaza Strip. That's victory. We will not be able to destroy the idea of Hamas, which is the same idea as ISIS, as Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas, like all of these Sunni Islamist groups, aspired to recreate the medieval caliphate in the Middle East and to expand that caliphate to include the globe. Just Hamas sees the destruction of Israel as the first stage in that process. So we can't destroy that idea. That idea transcends even the Middle East, and changing that will require an international educational effort. But we can degrade Hamas to the degree that even the people who still believe in that idea can't pose the same degree of threat to us. And then comes the arduous task of rebuilding Gaza and of finding a responsible leadership there that's more interested in the future of their children and grandchildren than they are in denying a future to our children and grandchildren.
Tom Friedman, and his column yesterday, said that the worst thing for Gaza would not be a continuation of Hamas rule. It would be Gaza left void with no one in charge. That would be even worse than Hamas. Do you agree with that?
No, of course I don't. I mean, Gaza in chaos is terrible, and people will suffer, particularly Palestinians will suffer. But Gaza under Hamas, Palestinians and Israelis will suffer. I don't get that logic at all. It totally eludes me, as Tom's logic often eludes me. It's not new. But certainly, to fill that chaos is an Israeli interest, not just a power. And I don't know if this government has done enough. Our own Israeli government has done enough to think about the day after. I'm certainly thinking about the day after. And I think we have to be open to any possibility that would end that chaos. I think there are people who are very much opposed to bringing in the Palestinian Authority to the West Bank, from the West Bank to Gaza. And I understand that completely. The Palestinian Authority is thoroughly corrupt and has no support from anybody. 85% of the Palestinians in what we call Judea and Samaria are pro-Hamas, not pro-Palestinian Authority. But I still think Israel should just be open to any possibility that would bring stability to a large degree and some element of peace to the region, whether it's finding a local leadership, one based perhaps on clans and tribes that have long been opposed to Hamas, or some other technocratic administration that would be in charge of the daily lives of Palestinians without threatening the lives of Israelis.
Will that require a new leadership for the Palestinian Authority? I know Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, he's 88 years old. Maybe time for a change of guard?
He's 88 years old, and he's a three-pack-a-day guy. And he won't stand for re-election. So he has no legitimacy. He has no plenipotentiary potential. He can't sign on a dotted line. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't represent anybody. And Palestinians can't stand him. Other than that, he's fine. Yes, he has to be. Other than that, he has to be replaced.
I know we in the United States are sensitive about elderly candidates right now, with 77-year-old Donald Trump and 81-year-old Joe Biden. In terms of the Israel surviving this ongoing war, I understand from my brother, people are coming home. Some of the people who were called up. It's no longer 360,000 people any longer who are engaged in this fight, is it?
No, it's not. Many people have been demobilized, including all the members of my staff. But they're all on call for the possibility of opening up a second front in the north. And that possibility is very real, Michael. Hezbollah, in contrast to Hamas, which poses a tactical threat to Israel, Hezbollah poses a strategic threat to Israel. It could take Israel out existentially. And so we have to be prepared for a major war in the north as well.
And is Iran behind these movements that have been so threatening and dire?
Of course. And Iran hasn't paid any price whatsoever, because the United States will not exact a price from Iran. Assiduously will not, even though Iranian-backed proxies have fired, you know, dozens and dozens of times at American bases in Iraq, Syria, and Jordan, and have closed the Straits of Mandeb to international shipping.
Okay, let us hope that the conversation continues and victory and success bless the efforts of the Israeli people. Michael Oren, you can get to him at claritywithmichaeloren.substack.com. We will be right back on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show. All across America. This is The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, and one of the hardest jobs for anyone in American politics right now is the job of Speaker of the House. I mean, first of all, the last couple of people to stand up as Speaker, including Kevin McCarthy, didn't last that long. And Mike Johnson has faced all kinds of difficulties with his speakership. But he's shown some real leadership on two issues that matter a great deal. And he's done that in the midst of a GOP retreat for the members of the House that is taking place at a historic resort in West Virginia. It's a beautiful place, by the way. And he's also made a very significant initiative regarding another policy foreign policy issue, in addition to his very strong response to the outrageous speech on the Senate floor by Chuck Schumer. And one of the things that Mike Johnson has made clear is he called Schumer's speech inappropriate and then said it's just plain wrong for an American leader to play such a divisive role in Israeli politics while our closest ally in the region is in an existential battle for its very survival. Okay, good for Mike Johnson. And doubly good for Mike Johnson. Headline in The Hill, Johnson signals shift on Ukraine to GOP senators. Now, this is him as the leader of the House responding to the Republicans, who are 49 of the 100 U.S. senators, just one seat away from dividing Senate leadership and two seats away from taking over the Senate. In any event, Speaker Mike Johnson told Republican senators Wednesday, that's yesterday, to expect the House to send them legislation to help Ukraine. But he cautioned that what comes out of the House will look substantially different from the $95 billion foreign aid package the Senate passed last month. Johnson tried to reassure frustrated GOP senators who asked him about funding for Ukraine during a question and answer session from the annual Senate Republican retreat. That retreat was held not in West Virginia, but in the Library of Congress. Johnson told senators that the House will send a Ukraine aid package to the Senate, but floated the idea of making it a loan or lend-lease program so U.S. taxpayers would not be shelling out tens of billions of dollars without any expectation of getting a return, according to senators who participated in the discussion. That part is outrageous because obviously the return that we are getting from the tremendous sacrifices made by the Ukrainian people is a gain of a chance for peace and stability in Europe and preventing Putinist attacks on other vulnerable countries in the region. And who knows which country could be next or would be next if the evil invasion of Ukraine is allowed to stand. And by the way, there's a piece I wrote about Americans and our response to Ukraine and some of the turmoil in Ukraine. It's a piece I wrote in 2013. So we're talking about 11 years ago. And what's fascinating to me is it's part of our Throwback Thursday theme that we have on our Substack, which is Michael Medved substack.substack.com. It's for Michael Medved, you go to .substack.com. And the piece is part of our Throwback Thursday series where we go back to a column or a commentary or a full article that I've done in the past that I think has particular relevance, and this one does because it's about pre-invasion Ukraine, where there was also a resistance on the part of a lot of people to caring about that particular country. But it's an important country, and so is Israel. And the Schumer speech, we just played a very brief excerpt of it. Here is near his conclusion of his 40-minute address. The Democratic majority leader, who's very proud of the fact he's the first majority leader for the U.S. Senate who's Jewish ever. And he even made the point that his name, Schumer, comes from the Hebrew word shomer, which means watchman or guardian. In any event, our so-called guardian said this, clip 9.
Fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past. 5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
Okay, this is outrageous and wrong and inappropriate. And for him to choose to make that address on the floor of the U.S. Senate merely shows some of the problems that the Democrats have with their extreme left wing, where you will find people in the Democratic Party who are not simply anti-Netanyahu, but are profoundly anti-Israel and don't believe that this particular country has a right to exist. and a right to those moments of peace that Ambassador Oren was talking about when he was confronting that situation. Coming up, there's a column in The Hill by a Democratic strategist who says that the GOP is already dying. He doesn't say the GOP just that. He says Trump's GOP is already dying. And is Max Burns there to celebrate that impending death? Well, he's a veteran Democratic strategist who will be joining us coming up on this show. And meanwhile, there's a question about vice presidential nominees. And we know who the vice presidential nominee is going to be on the Democratic side, because basically President Biden has already won renomination. And Kamala Harris is his designated running mate again. I'm sure there are a lot of Democrats who would love some kind of switcheroo, a new face, either as the presidential candidate or vice presidential candidate or both. But they do have an opening to be a vice presidential candidate for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is polling close to 10%, sometimes above in the polls. But it turns out that the two people he has designated and made it very clear that he is considering them as vice presidential nominees, Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, injured quarterback for the New York Jets, is very much in the news, partially because of his radical anti-vax position, but also because of being involved with all kinds of conspiracy theories in the past. This, of course, brings up why it is that the vice presidential candidates for all of the parties, including the third parties, are particularly important this time. Because when you're talking about candidates who are old, and even Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is 70 years old, when you're talking about people in that age range, well, there's always a possibility a vice president will be called in. But you're also designating a future leader of your party. Who should that be as a Trump's running mate? We'll be talking about that and more coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.